Gold. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 204. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who's discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Joel Bogus. Welcome, Joel.
Oh, Don, this is going to be so much fun. I've been looking forward to this interview all day long, and thanks for having me. And guys, congratulations on the success that you are having with this show. What a valuable resource.
Sir, you're very kind, and we are excited too. You are such a thought leader in this space that it's just fun to be connected to you. So thank you. A quick question. Are you using those prodigious talents of yours doing work that you love?
I am, and it is a pleasure to do it. We were just having a blast with the relaunch show, with the work that we're doing with podcasters, and the work that we're doing with people that are relaunching their personal and their professional lives.
Yeah, I see that. We really want to hear all about that. So Joe Bogus is a syndicated radio host, best-selling author, and life coach who teaches people how to relaunch their lives and start over with confidence. His latest book, Finding Your Voice, hit the number one spot on Amazon for success, happiness, and in the self-esteem categories. And his podcast, Relaunch, was named by Podcasters Paradise as the most inspirational and best overall podcast of 2014 and has recently passed the 1 million listens mark. He was recently mentioned by the Huffington Post as one of the top five inspirational podcasts, and Inc. magazine recently named him a top 20 business podcast of 2015. Joel and his wife, Pei, live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and have two golden retrievers, retired therapy dogs, Bubba and Jake. So, Joel, welcome again. That's a pithy summary of your career to date. Tell us what you're working on that has you now engaged and inspired, if you would.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak, Don. And again, thank you for this gracious invitation. We are so pumped about the future of podcasting. And one of the things that we're ramping up to is just a explosive beginning of 2016 and helping people not only put together a podcast, but to launch their podcast strongly so they can get to number one in new and noteworthy in their various categories. And so that they can then leverage that social proof to help them grow and multiply their audience, and most importantly, to share their voice. And frankly, I believe we all have within us a message, and I like to think of it as our voice. One of the things that I've learned is that people, they have a hunger to not only get in touch with it, but to share it with others. And that's what podcasting has done for us, and that's what it's doing for so many people these days in your audience, your listeners, and the people that we work with.
Yes, exactly. It's so exciting from every level. It's amazing. It's only been around a dozen years, and look at the explosion that's happened over the last 3 or 4 years. It's fantastic. As you know, everyone's life journey is composed of a series of turning points. Some call them passages. And at these times, we're each faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that ultimately determine the course of the next 6 or 7 years of our lives. So take us back, if you would, into your backstory and describe some of the more meaningful turning points in the life of Joel Bogus.
Sure. You know, Don, when I was about 3 years old, my parents separated and divorced, and I lived with my mom for a period of time. And when I was 5 years old, I was visiting my dad for the weekend, and we set off on this nature hike on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of the Texas Hill Country. And the kids kind of drifted apart from the adults in that little expedition. And I don't remember exactly the details, but we ended up scaling to the top of this cliff. And running parallel to the cliff probably looked more like a jungle gym to me with my little five-year-old arms or a five-year-old eyes, rather, but it was a bridge. And I actually scaled or stepped from the cliff to the bridge, ran to the middle of it. And at the end of the day, what we found out is this wasn't just a bridge, but this was actually a train trestle.
Ah.
And again, the details are a little bit sketchy, but a train came. There was a fall, a 30-foot fall, and I was left on the ground in a pool of my own blood. There was so much blood loss that by the time the rescue team was able to cut their way through the thicket and find us, and this is 40 years ago, Don. This was before GPS, before cell phones.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. By the time they found us, they were unable to start an IV on my little arm because all my blood vessels had collapsed. But through a divine and medical intervention, I was somehow able to be stabilized for the 45-minute trip to downtown San Antonio, where I'd be admitted into Santa Rosa Children's Hospital and in the intensive care unit, where I would spend the next 3 weeks of my life fighting for it in a coma. And when I came out of that coma, now at age 6, that's when the journey of recovery, of finding out who I was, getting back in touch with myself, that's when it really started for me.
That's amazing. Your dad, I can imagine what your dad, he must have been just crazy with anxiety and fear and everything else to watch that happen to you.
Well, frankly, still guilty, you know, 41 now years later. Yeah. I talked to my mom a little bit, and my mom said, you know, the first time I saw your dad after the accident happened in the waiting room at the hospital, she said he himself looked like death warmed over, as you can probably imagine.
Yes.
And as the dads in your audience can imagine too. But, you know, the recovery from that, it was a growth period for all of us.
Yes, yes. Well, what was it like? What happens next in the storyline? Here you're 6 years old and you recover from this situation that would kill most people, and mm-hmm. you came through it. So what was it like in the early going and working, I mean, being with your mom, being with your dad, school? What were some of the early influences on you?
Sure. Well, the recovery process was long, and there were many different things that kind of were included in that. But let me just kind of sum it up this way. I remember during the recovery process of being with my grandmother, and I spent a lot of time at my dad's parents' house, them raising me. You know, my folks were divorced. And I remember standing in the alleyway of my grandmother's house. She was behind me, and I was in front of her, and her index finger for one of her hands, it's probably her left hand, was looped through the belt loop of my little six-year-old boy shorts. And I was learning how to walk a straight line because the fall had left me with multiple skull fractures, which affected my balance in my inner ear. So I basically had to learn how to do that again, how to balance. And of course, my grandmother was there bracing me, kind of looping me, making sure I wouldn't go crashing to the ground as I relearned how to put one foot in front of the other. But beyond that, you know, Don, my parents were recovering from at least two things. Number one, the fact that they almost lost their only child, me. And number two, they had lost a relationship that they had high hopes for. So as they went through their own recovery on multiple levels, you know, I watched them battle through their own demons. With my dad, it was alcohol, sex, and other things like that. And my mom was something similar.
So what happened next as you were growing up in terms of your education and where your career headed? Early education, early job opportunities, what'd you do there?
Sure. Well, education was always an adventure for me. There were many therapists. There were many special education teachers. There were many trips to the principal's office. There were many disciplinary write-ups, things of that nature. But in a nutshell, here's what I remember. I remember people coming in, special educators and things of that nature. And it was, I guess, somewhat embarrassing, but they would come in the middle of the day, in the middle of the class, talk to the teacher, and then they would call me out. And then I would leave because I had to go to my, you know, special class, mm-hmm. or I had to go to my tutorial sessions and catch up things and stuff like that. And I guess it was kind of cool to be able to leave class, but it was not something that I always looked forward to. Got old too, but boy, that was pretty much the story of the growing up years.
So then how did you get into the world of work?
Yeah, I bumped around for a long time in corporate America. A lot of false starts, a lot of dead end situations there.
Where'd you start in corporate America?
I started out probably in, now that I think about it, sales. Let me back up a little bit. Well, when I was in high school, I had wanted to join the military. I wanted to be in the Marine Corps really, really bad. In fact, that's what I set my whole life up to do. My idea was to join the Corps, to serve for 20 years, and then to retire, and then to be able to work on career number two. Unfortunately, with the amount of injury that stuck with me and the damage that happened, I was disqualified from that. So I tried other branches of service. Police, fire, no luck there either. So now that right there, Don, was that required its own recovery, because as a young man graduating high school with hopes of being of service at some level, they were all dashed because of what had happened to me at age 5. So I had a long time to really figure out, gosh, what am I going to do? What kind of value can I offer people if I can't even do what I had planned for my whole life to do, which is to be in the service?
So how did you break out of that? What did you do?
Okay, great question. It's interesting when you kind of look back over my life, and I always had this burning desire within me to be a helper of people. A people grower is what I like to call it.
Okay.
And here's what I mean by that. When I was a little kid, trying to regain my balance and to learn coordination and discipline and all kinds of stuff that some people take for granted. Well, I didn't. I had to learn it all again. And one of the things that my folks did is they enrolled me in martial arts. And that was a tremendous good call for them.
Yes, it was. Which branch of martial arts?
Taekwondo.
Okay.
Mostly. And it was such a good call that as a teenager, I began actually teaching people. Teaching little kids is where I started the mechanics of martial arts. And while I was teaching them, Don, you know, kicking and punching and spinning and things of that nature, those are the mechanics that they were learning. Mm-hmm. Well, what I was really teaching them is focus, you know, how to believe in yourself, how to have confidence, how to stick with a program. That's what I was teaching people how to do, although I didn't realize it at the time. Then after that, then when I went on to college, I got a job as a swimming instructor and as a lifeguard.
Okay.
And while the mechanics of what I was teaching people had changed, no longer kicking and punching, and now, you know, stroke execution and, you know, how to breathe and for little kids, how to blow bubbles and stuff like that. Right. But what I was teaching people was exactly the same. How to be disciplined, how to focus, and how to have a certain level of confidence in yourself and in your abilities.
Yes, right. Yes, perfect.
And then when I went on to college, I worked as a personal trainer. You're obviously seeing the pattern here.
Yeah, sure am.
And then went on after I finished my master's degree in counseling as a counselor, then later as a life coach. And now I'm in my mid-40s, but if you look back at my life, gosh, ever since my teenage years, Don, I've been doing the same thing.
You sure have. That was very prescient of your parents to put you in that martial arts. That was amazing.
I think so.
So in college, did you major in counseling, psychology, or what was your major?
In college, ended up with a degree in general studies, which basically means get out of here. You've been here too long. And that was pretty much it.
Okay. Okay.
I was working in radio.
Okay, okay.
I was behind the mic doing traditional radio, and I was also in front of the camera doing some TV during the college years.
Okay. But how did you get into that now? That everybody can't go out and do that. How did you do it?
Sure. Okay. That was a passion of mine as well.
Okay.
And I ended up meeting someone that was doing radio, and this is such a funny story. You know, we'd talk almost daily, my friend. But I remember one night she told me that, hey, if you want to get into radio, so-and-so is quitting and you ought to come apply for their job. I was like, yeah, sure, okay. So that was like probably Friday night. So Monday, I showed up at the studio and tell them who I am and I'm here for the job. And they give me some cards to read into a microphone. And so I go into a studio, and way back then, it was all reel to reel. Like a real recording. It wasn't a drag and drop kind of thing.
Right.
So I read a couple of liner cards into the microphone, and very unceremoniously, I just left. I mean, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything about the radio business. And Friday afternoon, got a phone call, and it was the boss at that particular radio station asked me if I wanted to come to work that night.
Oh, my word.
And that's how it started right there. And fast forward now to 2015. Gosh, last time I was on a book tour earlier this year, I actually was a guest on the radio station that I originally started on.
Now, that's too beautiful.
That is very cool.
That is amazing. Okay, so those were heroic moments and gutsy moments, to say the least. You just manned up and went in there and got it. So how did that go? And did you then go on to graduate school and keep working at the radio station?
Give or take. When I started the radio career, that's when the educational experience ended up stretching for a lot longer than it needed to. And then when I finally got out of school, that's when I moved to Dallas and then went on to graduate school.
Okay.
But I had left the radio business at about the time of my college graduation, the okay. traditional radio business, that is.
So did you use your degree, your advanced degree?
Absolutely. I actually have two. I have an MBA and I have that master's in counseling that we've mentioned already. And the experiences that you get from that are always in use. And that's just working through life. It's always interesting when someone says, are you using your degree? Because I think some folks might think that, well, that means, did I put it on a resume
right.
or something like that? And yeah, I guess that's one way to use it.
Right.
But the other way to use it is in a practical way, the actual experiences that you learned, the relationships that you made, and the experiences.
Exactly. Well, you know the statistics, we've talked about these, that Gallup and others have been doing studies across the globe with millions of people for 25 years, and they turn up the one they did about a year and a half ago, they turn up the unsettling statistics that almost 90% of people aren't able to find their sweet spot, as I call it. They're not able to use their talents, their gifts, be in sync with their values and who they are as a whole person to come to work every day, come to their profession or their job, whatever it is. So what do you think that's about? You've got the background to talk about that, and you've experienced your story is certainly prepares you to talk about that. But what do you think those issues are about? Why do people get held up?
I think a lot of it has to do with our programming. Well, what am I saying? It all has to do with our programming. And when I talk about that, what I mean to say is that it's the programming that we're given as kids and as impressionable teenagers and young adults by well-meaning people. And those well-meaning people can be family, they can be our pastors, our teachers, our neighbors. And with the best of intentions, sometimes people instill in us certain things that they believe are true that aren't necessarily true, although it may be true from their perspective, mm-hmm. about us, about our value, about our potential, about what's possible. And if we hear that over and over and over enough times, well, then it's going to become truth to us.
Yes.
And that can hold us back. And unfortunately, that happens with a lot of people.
Yes.
I talk about limiting beliefs and, you know, thought patterns that can hold you back. And when I talk about some false beliefs that people may be clinging onto like a rope, well, sometimes folks, again, with the best of intentions, will say, well, Joe, those aren't beliefs. Those are facts mm-hmm. that I have. And it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up a little bit because is it a fact or is it just something that we've accepted as true mm-hmm. but isn't really?
So what do you say to people? How would you coach people or how would you counsel people or how would you advise people to be able to break out of this? It's almost a conspiracy. It's not a political conspiracy by any stretch. It's just a mindset that's just passed down from system to system.
I think the first thing you have to do, and this is something that Pei and I have do very, very well, is you got to create a safe space for people. We do this on the Relaunch show. We quickly create a safe space so our guests are able to be transparent. They're able to really talk about the deeper issues that they're struggling with and they're going through, and not just cocktail level conversation.
Yes.
I'm well past the cocktail level conversation, and frankly, I don't have any patience for it.
Right.
So if you create that safe space with a person, either face-to-face or through a podcast or on your blog or through your video, then you can challenge that person. And one of the things that I've come to understand, and I think you probably have too, Don, is that people want to be challenged.
Yes, they do.
But you got to challenge them in the right way. That doesn't mean people want to be argued with, but they want to be pushed. And it takes a little bit of art and a little bit of science. And of course, a little bit of my education and experience paid off as well. But if you're able to challenge and inspire people in the right way, they'll surprise you and they'll surprise themselves. And that's a reward in and of itself.
What have been the best benefits, the most palpable benefits for you choosing your own path, taking the road less traveled, chiseling it out? You had certainly had some obstacles and issues you had to deal with, and you overcame them and you fought through them. What have been the most meaningful benefits to you doing that? To your life overall.
Okay, very good. You know, it's helping someone break through their own barriers and challenges. I still get goosebumps when I think about a woman in her 50s that had never written a book before. And because she went through the Relaunch Elite program, she not only wrote a book, but she had it published and she's doing book signings Now, matter of fact, there's two women that fit that description that both went through our program together. And just this past weekend, they met each other for the first time after being accountability partners. And what did they do? Well, they did a mutual book signing together. What a cool idea.
Wow. Yes.
And it's giving people the clarity, confidence, and the direction to be able to do that. And neither one of them had any writing experience. Had you asked a traditional teacher if they had any business writing a book, that teacher would probably have said no, not at all, because they weren't experienced writers, but who cares? And they did it anyways. And the fact that I was somewhat a part of that is tremendous.
Yes, I understand that. Well, you said everybody's got a story. Everybody wants to share their story. Everybody's living their story. So it's perfect. So if you had to boil down, this whole conversation has been about boiling down, but if you had to summarize for listeners just a few basic principles from your whole life of 40 some odd years, early 40s, how would you boil down the principles? Just a handful.
Okay. Fantastic. I would say listen to your voice because no one else can hear it. And when we talk about voice, I use that word a lot. What I really mean is the inner voice, the voice that is stirred inside your heart. And I encourage people to listen to it. In fact, it's on the very front page of my book. And the reason that I do that is because no one can hear it but you. So you shouldn't expect anyone else to hear it. It's okay if they don't. But as long as you do, then stick with it. Go with it. Pray on it. Meditate on it. Mm-hmm. Visualize on it. And then put together a plan. You can start to move in that direction. An equation that I give, and this is practical,
okay,
is C plus C equals D. And here's what I mean by that. Clarity, the clarity of who you really are, plus confidence equals direction. That's C plus C equals D. Here's what that looks like. Once you have that clarity of your talents, that's where you come in. A person's strengths, that's where you come in. Once you have that kind of clarity, well, then you're going to have confidence. See, it builds upon itself. And then when you have clarity and confidence, well, then you have the direction of, oh, okay, so this is a good direction. This is a great place for me to go. And I've seen that equation play itself out time and time again. So you asked for a boiling down of sorts. Well, getting clarity will build your confidence. Those two will give you the direction that you're looking for right now, professionally, personally, spiritually, emotionally. It'll get you covered.
Yeah, yes, I agree. I think that's right on target. You've written your own books, but what other books have been inspirational to you and your life?
One of the best business books that I've ever read is called Becoming a Category of One. A buddy of mine, Joe Calloway, wrote that book, and it is like a textbook to me. It's not written like a textbook, but it's like one for me. And I have that highlighted and dog-eared. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe has since become a friend of mine, and he's a frequent visitor to the Relaunch Show. And that book is head and shoulders, one of the best business books that I've read. And what Becoming a Category of One is all about is how do you make your business, product or service, belong in a category of one? See, what most people do, Don, is they put themselves in a category of many, and then what happens is they have to fight, struggle, and push for space. However, if you learn how to put yourself in a category of one, and Joe does a great job kind of breaking down the formula for how to do that, well, then there's no competition. So you don't have to worry about, well, my show is similar to so-and-so's, or my coaching program is kind of like so-and-so's.
Right.
But if it's a standalone, which is what Joe encourages and I do too, boy, that puts you in a whole different ballgame. Becoming a Category of One of them. A Compound Effect by my buddy Darren Hardy is another business book staple.
Okay. Darren Hardy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So how do you deploy the internet in your life and business and overall, what the tools do you like?
Well, social media is a part of everyone's life these days. So, of course, we do our best to connect with people, generally on Twitter or Facebook. Twitter seems to drive most of our podcast numbers and growth.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. It seems to anyways. So we use that a lot. But one of the things that I don't want is more social media.
Mm-hmm.
I actually want less social media. And that's how we're kind of positioning our business moving forward is I don't want more screen time. I want less screen time. And so we're making some adjustments to where I can get back to the basics, get in front of people, like real people, like in a chair, in a room, in a room where I can shake their hand.
Right.
Because one of the things that, that Pay and I have learned about my style is that's when I'm at my best. I mean, I love doing podcasts and I love, you know, doing a video and television shows and things like that. And I've been on TV over 100 times and that's all fun. But, you know, being face to face is, that's in a category of its own.
Yes. Yes.
And that seems to be where I've always connected the best. And I've also made the most impact. So we're getting back to that.
Yes. Excellent. So what do you see happening in the course of your life? What's your vision over the next handful of years going forward?
One of the things that we want to do in 2016, which we're right on the cusp of that new year, is I want to hit my second million on the relaunch show. We're well past the 1 million listeners mark. I think you mentioned that earlier. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes.
We definitely want to get past 2 in 2016. One of the things that I'm ramping up for is to have another class of podcasters that we help to launch their show and to hit number one in their categories multiple times. And we want to do that within 100 days.
Okay.
And that's one of the nifty things that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what are you proudest of?
Yeah, that is a great question. I would say that I'm proudest of my family. I'm proud to have been successfully married for 14 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm proud of the relationship that we have as a family. That would be my two dogs and my wife. We have no kids at this time, but those are our kids.
Joel Bogus, what a great pleasure being with you today. And we so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey. I know listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Yes. Again, Don, thank you so much for having me on the show and congratulations on its success. Best place to go, I'll give two URLs. Relaunchshow.com is the place where we park all of our shows. That's also where you can connect with all of the training resources. And if you're listening on an iPhone, you can enter relaunchshow.com/ITC on your iPhone and in the Safari browser, actually. And that opens up right to the iPhone, or I'm sorry, to the podcast app, where you can then subscribe, rate, and review our show.
Oh, wonderful. Perfect. Listeners know you can go to Discover Talent Podcast, our website, click on podcast, find the highlights of this fine interview with Joel and the highlights as well as the links that he just described. So that's an easy path. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us today. You know, we have an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. It's free. And listeners have told us it's a great Kickstarter for their career, whether they're 18 or pre-retirement, to just rethink the aspects of who they are and what they want to do and how to get there. So I hope you'll take advantage of it. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like our show and our content, we would love to have you be a member of our tribe and tell us how we can continue to serve you better. We would love that. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them and we cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.